It's the Popmatic Podcast
for July 13th, 2016. We're getting pumped.
That's right.
Get pumped.
I'm already tired.
Coming to you from the still-under-construction exercise studio at Nashville Public Library downtown, this is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Jeremy, and joining me today are...
Amanda.
Mac.
Bill, and I'm on steroids.
Woo!
Ooh,
for today's show.
Roid Rage Talk Show. No one knows that song but me. This week, we're bringing you the cure for the dreaded summer slide. What's that, you say? It's when kids, free from the rigid schedule of the classroom, stop reading and their brains turn to mush. Now, this happens to adults, too. We are an example of that, though it's usually fueled by margaronas and exposure to phrases like gastropub. Our solution is the Summer Challenge. It's a proprietary blend of books, movies, music, and programs, which will help you fight off the slide without needles or invasive procedures. Now, here's how the Summer Challenge works. You sign up for it online or in person at any Nashville Public Library location. You log how many minutes you read on the website or in a handy little booklet that you can hand in to your favorite librarian or paraprofessional. You do that now between now and August 13th of this year. 600 minutes, that's 10 hours, gets you a choose-your-own-prize certificate and a chance to be entered into the grand prize drawing, which will vary from location to location, but will likely have something to do with wellness, because apparently that's the theme. If everyone in the city collectively reads 5 million minutes, which sounds like a lot, but really isn't, because come on, there's a lot of people in this town, we'll look the other way on your overdue fines, wink, wink, during the week of August 14th through the 20th. It's a heck of a deal, because all you gotta do is use the library, which you should be doing anyway. So we'll have events all summer long, so be sure to check out our website or your local branch for info. And because the theme is apparently wellness, the PopMatic Podcast is going to bring you, our beloved listeners, episodes for the next 4 weeks. Four is the number including this one, exploring physical, mental, spiritual wellness, plus a chance to undo all that healthiness with Cheat Week!
Looking forward to it!
Yep! It's the best. Amanda.
Yes, Jeremy.
Please provide us an example of physical wellness.
Okay. So for some people, summertime is a great time to be outdoors and get active. Not for me. So I have some friends who love to bicycle, and they've done the century rides, which apparently like is this thing where you ride 100 miles in less than 12 hours, because that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
But as for me, I'm more of an amateur. I used to ride my bike all the time when I was little. But I was a small kid in a small town, and there really wasn't anything else to do. There really wasn't traffic to care about, so why not? But now I can't tell you the last time I was actually physically on a bicycle. Now, I went to college at Indiana University, which I've mentioned, and each spring there would be a crazy weekend around the Little 500, which is a bicycle race. You can see the spectacle for yourself if you watch the movie Breaking Away. Now, in the movie, the main character is obsessed with Italian cyclists and wants to be just like them. And the book I'm going to talk about today is also focused on Italian cycling. So the book is called Luigi's Freedom Ride. It's by Alan Murray. And in it, we meet Luigi Ferraro, who, through unique circumstances, comes to own his own bicycle in the Tuscan countryside in the late 1930s. So Luigi, too, becomes obsessed with bicycles because apparently this is the thing in Italy to do. And we see him and his bicycle move through life together. During World War II, Luigi is drafted into the Italian army. He actually gets to meet Mussolini and is eventually trained as an elite bicycle soldier. He's never really overly political during the war, but Luigi and his friends eventually run away from the army and start fighting the fascists as underground fighters. Then after the hostilities, Luigi and his Jewish friend Jacob set off on an adventure, first to the Holy Land and then on to Australia, and their bikes are right by their sides throughout. Eventually, Luigi opens his own bicycle repair shop and spends the rest of his days happily repairing bicycles with his friends and family. I really enjoyed this book, partially because it was set in the Tuscan countryside, which I loved when I was in Italy. But the characters are really well written, and the story weaves together quite nicely. If this sounds like something you might like, you can also check out The Memory of Running by Ron McLardy. This book is also about riding bicycles. This time he goes across America a la Forrest Gump. But it was sneakily good as well. I had no idea what I was getting into when I started reading it. I'm like, this is really good. So the library has print versions of both of these books that you can check out today. Then we can get our bikes in good working order and go for a ride through Tuscany. Who's with me?
Hi.
I'm sounding familiar.
For some reason, when you were talking about your book, I was reminded we have a book. Well, we had a book. I don't know if we do now. So this bit could all be cut. But we have a book on the Tour de France. They give a title to the person who comes in last.
Oh, nice.
And they have like a history. They had a history of the people who've gone last for the past like 50 years or something. Some of them are like, you know, inspiring. Like they're people who like, you know, always dreamed of going the Tour de France, and even though they're not great at cycling. And
yes, that would be
me. And other of them are like, you know,
I'd have like the old granny bike with the basket and the bell. Ding, ding.
Others are funny. I think it's called Funny Losers is the name of that book.
I forgot.
It's about going the distance.
Yeah.
Which ties into mine.
That's right. So,
keep that in mind.
I should save that for, you know.
That would be Lantern Rouge, The Last Man in the Tour de France by Max Leonard.
Anyway, this is the longest literature I've ever written, and I had so much fun writing it. It'll probably no one else will care. Oh, boy.
It's just all pauses for, like, throat clearing.
Fire pirate. The Seed. My mother's house in December of 2009. There is nothing on TV, and she wouldn't let me watch Game Show Network, as per you.
Aw, sad. No Family Feud?
I see that Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen is on HBO. Now, I thought Transformers is pretty good, if a bit slow. It was like Godzilla movies, where you're bored 90% of the movie, and the last 10% is super awesome. Unfortunately, Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen is a Lovecraftian nightmare I've never recovered from. Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen is like getting a root canal from Stevie Wonder, while simultaneously getting a hydrochloric acid enema during a level 10 earthquake. Many years ago, various Mexican drug cartels debated showing captured journalists Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen instead of slowly killing them, but they decided that was far too cruel. Aliens.
I can feel the air leaving the room.
I don't know what that weird giggling was. Alien civilizations might have given us space travel and world peace, but we have Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen, so that can never be. Somewhere around the seed with the big transformer that had the giant floppy robot testicles, my eyes filled with blood, and foam started pouring from my mouth. I love my own jokes. I entered a rage-induced fugue state, where I decided that beloved TV series of my youth, like Transformers, were now dead to me. And
they were more than meets the eye.
Yeah. And I finally outgrown, you know, the caring about, you know, oh, they're making a Ghostbusters with all women. I don't care. Oh, look, Michael Bay's making Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Let's get outraged, Mike. I don't care. And lastly, Michael Bay can go to hell. So I was quite surprised to find that on the advice of a few trusted critics that I watched and enjoyed Michael Bay's movie Pain and Gain. Ooh.
I'm hot! I'm big! No. No!
My name is Daniel Lugo, and I believe in fitness. All this began because it was time to push myself harder.
Oh, there you go, yes!
Otherwise, I was looking at another 40 years of wearing sweatpants to work.
Mr. Doble, are you currently using steroids?
I think they messed me up.
Don't worry, that's what we specialize in here. Penis magic.
I'm a self-made man. I made a lot of money.
Maybe yourself ought to spend some of it on a salad.
You know who invented salad? Poor people.
What's going on, D.L.?
Hey, but just get tired of being where you are, Adrian?
No. I kind of like it here. I mean, the weights are new to
me. I mean, in life, man. When's the last time you paid your rent when it was due?
I got a plan to change that.
Where'd you do your time, pal?
Up north.
How you fixed for a job now?
You just can't kidnap a guy and take his things. That's so illegal.
Well, sure we can.
Victor Kershaw is a criminal prick who deserves bad stuff to happen to him.
We go through with this, nobody gets hurt, right?
Oh man, we snatch him.
There he is!
We grab him, he signs a few signatures. We give him a protein shake, he doesn't even know what happened. I watched
watched a lot of movies, Paul. I know what I'm doing.
The Sun Gym Gang has successfully acquired every asset you had.
What happens now?
Now I go to work.
I gotta get a pump.
That's it. It's good. It hurts. I know it does. That's it. Get it.
You said no violence.
And I meant it when I said it, I swear to God.
I cannot kill.
Duly noted. Look, when this is over, we'll all go camping, all right?
Okay.
Mark Wahlberg plays Daniel Lugo, a bodybuilder and personal trainer who decides to kidnap a client of his to get money to help out his local gym. He gets help from his friends, a fellow trainer named Adrian Durball, played by Anthony Mackie, and a former addict turned hardcore Christian, Paul Doyle, played by Dwayne The Rock Johnson.
Woo.
Cool. You know, people's elbow, y'all.
People's elbow. Oh, I can smell what he's cooking.
Flying off the turnbuckle. Eventually, instead of getting some of his money, they get all of his money and, of course, become corrupted by all their newfound riches. They soon go through the ill-gotten gains fairly quickly and try to find another weak, rich person that they can intimidate and swindle. Ed Harris, who is seemingly making a late-period career of showing up in a movie really late and stealing the show, see also a train that pierces snow, plays a super cool private detective who works with the police to bring them down. Personally, I view this movie as kind of like a noir with comedic elements. I think a lot of people were sold on this being a straight-up comedy, but there are long stretches of not funny. The gang starts out as a bunch of roided-out boobs, but as the movie progresses, they do some pretty reprehensible things. Their criminal enterprise goes seriously awry, and murder, armed robbery, and various body parts get sliced and shot off. Also, Michael Bay shows a lot of contempt for every single character. But maybe Ed Harris's, but really, you know, after a few of his movies, you can see he feels that way about all his characters.
That's pretty standard, really.
And or the human race.
And then he blows
something up. Yeah, which is kind of neat. He certainly feels contempt for basic human decency after Transformers 2, Revenge of the Fallen. Amazingly, Pain and Gain is based on a true story, which you can read about online. Note, a lot of based on a true story movies, the facts can stray pretty far from the film, but, you know, it's still pretty close.
Is that I thought it was supposed to be like in the vein of Magic Mike in a way.
I mean, you know, they do like work out, and apparently, like, you know, Mark Wahlberg kind of buffed like himself for the film and stuff.
Yeah, but, I thought it was like a meat show for part of it or something. That was part of the.
No,
that's a term I just coined.
It's really a crime story.
Yeah, yeah, much more like a noir. Like, I mean, uh-huh. You know, Mark Wahlberg like narrates the whole thing, and like, you know, the crime enterprise turns bad eventually, and you know.
Spoiler alert.
It also, you know, it's like, well, it's kind of, it was more like if the Coen brothers had directed, it's about stupid people committing crimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, yeah.
And they just have
Michael
no idea.
Michael Bay's version of a Coen brothers.
Yeah.
That's pretty fascinating. Don't want to close my eyes.
What have you got, Bill?
I hate boxing. And if you paid me to go to a boxing match, I wouldn't go. However, I do love boxing movies, and I'm going to talk about a movie I really love. I love the movie Rocky. Before I start, I'm only going to be talking about the original Rocky that was released in 1976. I quit going to Rocky movies after Rocky III because I thought they were becoming silly. Rocky goes to Russia, beats up a giant Russian. A friend of mine once said he kept pulling for Drago. So,
I must break you.
Back to Rocky. Here was a little movie that was made for less than $1 million, written and starring by Sylvester Hu, and co-starring the actress who played Michael Corleone's sister from the Godfather movies and that guy who played the Penguin on Batman. The story is quite simple. A club fighter, Rocky Balboa, gets a chance to fight the champion of the world, Apollo Creed. As I said, a simple plot, but the characters are wonderfully complex. I like the characters in the movie. We can relate to them. Same hopes and dreams to be needed and to be loved. Rocky came out in 1976. This was before the internet, so Rocky was pretty much a word-of-mouth movie. I still remember going to Rocky at the theater, and the final boxing match literally had the movie's audiences cheering at the screen. Rocky is about going the distance, and much like today's theme, you've got to have physical wellness to do that. Well, that's a lot of BS. What I really wanted to say is the original Rocky is a great movie. Sylvester Stallone did a beautiful job as both writer and director. The director, John G. Avildsen, captured the slums of Philadelphia to tell this Horatio Alger-type story. A memorable score by Bill Conti. Great performances by the entire cast, probably the best work they've done in their entire career, in my opinion. And here's a fun fact. According to Steven Spielberg, Rocky was the movie that sold the industry on a Steadicam. When Sylvester Stallone is running up the stairs, there is a man behind him with a camera, and that introduced the Steadicam to the industry. Great movie, Rocky.
What do you think about when a buzzer's out without money? What do you think about when the 15th buzzer of you coming out?
Rocky!
Jeremy.
Okay, I want to go climb some steps.
It inspired you that much.
Just some steps, three.
Yeah, a few steps.
Like three.
I heard there's a statue of him outside the museum now.
Yeah, I think so.
Very ugly. It doesn't look like him statue.
Yeah, I drove past it. My brother-in-law lives there. I drove past it.
Like the Lucille Ball statue in her hometown.
That thing is a nightmare fuel.
That's like the Transformers 2 Revenge of the Fallen. The statues. It was like a dangling robot testicle. I don't know that anyone would aspire to be a physical specimen like Andre the Giant. He was 7 feet, 4 inches tall, and at his heaviest, weighed 520 pounds. Andre René Roussimoff was born in Grenoble, France, a city at the foot of the Alps. And as a child, he got rides to school in the back of rider Samuel Beckett's truck because he was too big for the bus. And by age 17, he took up the sport which would make him famous, wrestling. And he must have been an impressive sight when he was viewed from the stalls at Madison Square Garden or any of the other arenas or stadiums where he wrestled around the world. But everyday life must have really been a struggle for him, like having to ride in the back of a truck instead of to the school bus, or finding a comfortable bed, or getting enough calories to survive via food or beer. And it's these little moments that kind of make writer-artist Box Brown's Andre the Giant Life and Legend such a touching book. Brown is a prolific cartoonist and publisher of a small independent comic company called Retrofit, and his style is like a less calculated version of Chris Ware's. I don't know if you're familiar with Chris Ware. He did Jimmy Corgan. Chris Ware is sort of all formal wizardry and mechanical perfection, and Brown is kind of all heart and warmth. So it's the exact opposite. They just sort of look the same. His love for his subject is obvious on every page, and Brown's Andre the Giant fills every panel that he's in, both physically and emotionally. And what emerges in the book is a bittersweet portrait of a man who literally didn't fit in most places that he went, but who was also isolated, because of this stature and stuff. And since this is the physical component of our Summer Challenge series, it should be noted that Andre the Giant was not exactly the picture of physical wellness. He drank a lot, and it's been reported by different wrestlers that at various times in one sitting that he could drink between 120 and 150 beers, ranging from 12 to 16 ounces. Take that, flying saucer plate.
Yeah, wow.
Jealous. Yeah, there was a story.
Do you want to run a tab over here?
Run it to the ground.
We.
He apparently was like in a hotel lobby and drank so much like they couldn't move him.
Oh, yeah, he fell onto the ground.
Yeah,
and then did he like wake up the next morning and like brush himself off and walk out? Like they were confused. Like the whole management, like it was like a situation because they couldn't move him.
There's a giant man. Now, his giant stature was due to gigantism. And then that's caused by an excess of growth hormone. And then this later developed into a condition called acromegaly. And then this condition causes the body to continue to grow and can result in headaches, hypertension, kidney failure. You can have an enlarged forehead, like a caveman kind of thing, and a host of other maladies, and including a large heart. And then in 1993, Andre the Giant died of congestive heart failure, probably caused by partially by the drinking and then also by his giant stature. And like me, artist Box Brown is in his mid-30s, and I'd say anyone our age or older or even younger too, I guess, has some kind of connection to Andre the Giant, either through a passing love or a continuing love of professional wrestling or his role in the film The Princess Bride. He was billed as the eighth wonder of the world in the ring, and this book sort of shows us why that title was about more than his size.
I read this book too. As I've mentioned before, I walked past the ruins of former Pope Place, and there was a WWE bus there one morning a couple weeks ago. And it was weird that, like, you know, I mean, I'm not a wrestling expert, but it's like modern wrestler, modern wrestler, modern wrestler, and Andre the Giant is on the side of the bus.
Nice.
And it was like, that's... wow, like, he's such a fixture. Yeah, even, like, yeah. You know,
to... It's like, I feel like as a kid, like, even though I'd never... like seen a John Wayne movie or something, like I could like make do the John Wayne voice. He is a figure that sort of has entered that stature sort of for people.
Back to Rocky, but this time Rocky III. You remember that scene with Hulk Hogan? They had that scene where it was a kind of this promotional thing where Rocky would fight this wrestler.
Yeah,
Thunderlips.
Yeah, that was actually based on an incident with Andre Giant and a boxer.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah, I forget the boxer's name, cool. But that's where Sylvester Stallone got that. And It's also funny, Rob Reiner, when they were casting, totally opposite, but... you know, they needed a giant for the Princess Bride. Yeah. He said, well, we didn't have much options. They had to go to the Yellow Pages with a giant. So we were pretty, hopefully, they were just glad Andre wanted to do the movie.
Yeah, it would, the guy from Twin Peaks probably wouldn't have, he didn't have quite, he was just tall and scary looking.
The actor's name is Carol Striken, and he would like you to know.
It is happening again. It is happening again.
Hey guys.
Hey Jeremy.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it.
Maybe the library doesn't.
But either way, it's tickling our fancy. Man.
I get to go first? Yeah.
Guess we're just going to go the way
Let's
we did.
Let's do it.
I like it. Make
I like
the circle.
Simplicity.
Okay.
You made an executive decision.
Nice.
That's what I do. I'm a co-host, I guess.
Okay, so usually I don't watch the previews on the DVDs I bring home. I don't know why. Maybe it's because when you see a movie in a theater, you have to sit through 30 to 40 minutes watching snippets of movies you don't care about.
Wow.
It could be potentially scary. So I say bring on the main feature already. So, but for whatever reason, somehow this one snuck past me. And I sat down at home to watch a completely different movie, and there I was watching these crazy Swedes create music with everyday objects in extraordinary situations. The best was playing music on a guy in an actual operating room. Just watch it. You have to trust me on that one. Okay, now, since you guys are always mansplaining things to me. So I feel like I need to music explain for just a second.
Oh, nice.
So in the academic world of music, there's a big dichotomy between what's finger quotes classical music, like Haydn, Beethoven, Chopin, even, you know, Mahler, Wagner, and more art music of Schoenberg, Glass, and Cage, and pretty much anything Brian listens to.
So there's good and terrible.
Well, so
I thought if it didn't have words, it was classical music.
No, so basically,
classical was like a period in the early 19th century.
It is technically a period.
Oh, I'm still mansplaining again. Sorry.
Raise your hand if you have a degree in music. Okay, let them talk. Okay. So basically, to some people, the first group is the most wonderful music ever made ever, and outside of a very small circle of influence, the rest of the stuff is absolute crap. So just keep this in the back of your mind as we go forward. So in the movie Sound of Noise, a group of six musicians, two composers, and four drummers come together to perform this epic piece of music on various found objects around their town. So most of this is, of course, completely illegal, so the musicians are chased by police officer Amadeus Vernerbring. Now, Vernerbring is the token tone-deaf member of a family of musical prodigies. His mother was a great concert pianist, his younger brother is currently a world-famous conductor, and hence, you know, Amadeus got his name from Mozart. So while Amadeus is mostly a disappointment, but I actually think he's my favorite character in the movie. This movie is a little bit Blues Brothers, a little bit Mr. Holland's Opus, and a little bit Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. Mostly because that's the only other Swedish movie I've ever seen, and it has cops in it.
The Swedes have a lot of movies.
I'm just baby steps. I'm just starting.
Wow.
It's a little bit Swedish Chef. A little bit Wall.
I don't understand what they're saying. They just keep talking and throwing things.
A little Seventh Seal.
Bergman-esque.
So, yeah, that's awesome. If you like music, you need to watch this film. It was awesome and funny, and the library has it on DVD, so get your copy today before Mike mansplains more to me.
Whoa. Oh. It's not a documentary?
But no, it's a fiction movie.
Okay, so for some reason, I thought you were...
It'd be funny if it wasn't a documentary.
Well, yeah, you said the thing about a guy in an operating room. I was like, did they get his permission?
He did not sign a release form.
The Hippocratic Oath is different.
They like blur out his face.
It just says Bjergen, 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 Bjergen.
Bjergen cured, yeah. Bjergen.
Farfik Nugen. That means, like, please do whatever you will with my body.
Meatball Ikea.
Meatball Ikea.
Anyway,
now
I just feel guilty for mansplaining a man again. Oh.
So now you're mansplaining your mansplaining.
Yeah, I'm mansplaining myself. Well, actually, me.
Actually, I'm not mansplaining.
I'm not, you know.
See, it's just the Ghostbusters is a big part of my childhood. So.
Alas, this is going to be my only podcast for the entire month of July.
Aww.
Yeah, frowny face.
Where's my cake? You promised me.
As I am making a pilgrimage to Battle Creek, Michigan, to kneel down in front of the striped throne of Tony the Tiger and beg for mercy for only eating Frosted Flakes 11 months of the year instead of all 12. Long-time listeners may know that I have dallied with Frankenberry the past couple of years in Shocktober.
I love when you say long-time listeners. I think it's so funny.
You know, I actually did look up tourism there, and it's like, there's nothing. It's like, come on. Apparently, only me. Apparently, children grew up and, like, eat, like, garbage, while I continue to eat tasty cereal.
Are you going to read The Road to Wellville?
No. Oh, I watched part of the movie once. If Tony the Tiger declares me great, I live. But if I'm not great, I never return. So, while you're waiting on bated breath to hear about the munificence of Lord the Tiger, might I recommend a song? The first three films in the Transformers trilogy star human grease stain Shia LaBeouf, who seems to have...
Wait, this is something you're enjoying?
Yeah.
Okay, we're just checking. Okay.
No, this is something I like. Who seems to have all the jaw-droppingly artsy pretentiousness of James Franco, but none of the wide-eyed and giggling charm. So when I heard that there is a song called Shia LaBeouf Live by Rob Cantor floating around the internet a little while ago, I passed. But a coworker kept recommending it to me, and I finally caved and listened, and it is a delight.
You're walking in the woods. There's no one around, and your phone is dead. Out of the corner of your eye, you spot him.
Shia LaBeouf.
He's following you, about 30 feet back. He gets down on all fours and breaks into a sprint. He's gaining on you.
Shia LaBeouf.
Is everything I love in a song. Why, there's a chorus, a dark sense of humor, a celebrity I have utter contempt for being surprisingly awesome. See also Chuck Norris. A fight scene where every time I listen to it, like, I do that weave thing I do when I'm watching a fight scene during a movie because, like, you know, oh, will the axe get him this time? Gratuitous violence. It is basically amazing. Shia LaBeouf Live by Rob Cantor.
Did you hear about that poor guy on the New York subway system who got hit in the face because he looked like Shia LaBeouf?
He deserved it.
He deserved it. Not him, guys. Gosh.
Wrong guy. He did that whole short film that was a ripoff of a comic.
He plagiarized something, and then his apology was a plagiarization.
Yeah, jeez. But that's art.
Because he's Shia LaBeouf.
LaBeouf means the meat.
Yeah.
Right?
Show me the beef.
The beef. Show me the beef.
Thanks, Wendy's. What do you got, Jeremy?
Wait a second.
Did you?
I got some questions.
Jeremy, in the back of the room.
You're going to Battle Creek, Michigan.
Oh, yeah.
To the Kellogg's factory.
Well, I mean, you know, in the yes and sense, yes. Actually, no.
Are you going because there was some sort of battle at a creek there? Or
that's where the Kellogg's factory is. That's where Toadie the Frosted Flakes is manufactured.
Okay, are you actually going there though? Like
I was going to, and then I found out that Cereal Land doesn't exist anymore.
Okay,
I was very frowny face. World of Coca-Cola, sure. Frosted Flakes Land, you know? Can
Hershey
I pet Tony the Tiger?
Yeah, Hershey, PA, man.
You know, could I kneel before a striped throne and swear fealty before him? No. What do you got, Jeremy?
I really liked Seven Men from Now. It showed on the 9th at the library.
Randolph Scott.
Yeah, it sounded pretty amazing. Yeah. Bill really sold it to me, but I was playing board games with Brian.
Yeah. Also tickling my fancy are a couple of bands from town here, Bad Friend and Ocelots. I saw them play at Cafe Coco last week, and...
Do you mean last week in June? Or
in real life I saw them last week. Anyway,
okay.
They're both very good, and they're local bands, and... They're good. Also tickling my fancy is Electricity, which allowed me to see those bands and also allows me to live a comfortable life.
You mean like the concept and not a band, right?
Yeah. I just okay. Thanks for flying that kite, Ben Franklin. Roll my R's, or I would totally do that. I do it with the ball thing in the back of my throat.
Sounds like you're gargling.
I can't do it. Yeah, exactly. I can't do the tongue thing. I have a very small, very wide, but very short tongue.
Do you have corrections?
I just have a minor one that I didn't plagiarize anything, Brian. I just watched the video and had had thoughts about it. And wrote them down. And it turned out that when I read that article, I was like, oh, nerds on the internet, like, had my similar ideas, but went way, you know.
Whoa.
Nerdy obsession, nerdy overboards.
Or all the nerds copied the same ad copy, plagiarized the same ad copy.
Could be.
I didn't do it. Copy, no,
I just wrote down what I saw. So there.
I also, I said that we recorded our, because this, you know, we're recording this on July 13th, or this is for July 13th. So I said that we recorded our July 4th episode the day of the Brexit vote, but we actually recorded it the day before the vote, for people who remember what that was so long ago. Also, and this has been building for a while, we all know Brian never finishes books he talks about.
It's a running theme. I always find it amusing.
Case in point.
Ooh.
If he would have actually read Guns of August, he would have known that Tuckman dedicates a whole chapter to the Battle of Tannenberg, which took place on the Eastern Front. I am fed up with his arrogance. I ban him from speaking on this podcast ever again.
Wow, that got really rowdy.
I like this. Oh, boy. Pod drama. This could be the best
we'll
episode
see how
ever.
That works. I give you 5 minutes.
Oh. Ghostly engineer Brian trying to stifle Sag anything.
For more information.
I'm sorry. Got rowdy.
Correction to corrections.
Well, okay, so I just wanted to say, first of all, that the 727 Fifth Harmony album is on Freegal finally. I talked about that a few weeks ago, so just FYI, it is up. Feel free to download. And then I don't mean to pick on Brian too, but. I caught flack last week because I talked about a British guy. Well, when you listen back, Brian talked about an Italian guy the whole time.
Oh!
So.
You know, he also talked about a Tickle My Fancy quality segment in the main body of the show, too.
Oh, that didn't bother
But
me
that was, well, but. I'm just saying. I feel like that might violate his own rules, but I could be wrong. Although he did preface it by saying he was switching it up. So, yeah. Hang loose.
For other items that hang loose.
Wow.
How about them Cubs?
For more information on baseballs, can visit www.library.nashville.org.
The show was edited by an evil robot.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean.
Next week.
Mental wellness.
That's right. There's someone in my head, but it's not me. Summer Challenge Saga rolls on with a trip to the booby hatch. It's a chance to say hatch on the podcast.
Lie down on a comfy couch and tell your dreams to a strange man with a beard. That man's Jerry.
What about traveling? Hotel beds, are they a problem?
No, I tried to find a hotel where they got a king-size bed.
Yeah.
The worst is when I go in Japan, all those cars are so small.
Sure.
Even in a hotel, I can't go through the door, I can't go to the bathroom, everything is...